Hello, you're listening to The Joys of Teaching Literature. We're here talking about how to make life easier for English teachers. This is exactly our topic today, actually. The title is Five Ways to Handle the ELA Workload. If you want to know more about me, I offer online professional development for high school English teachers, and my website's theteachersworkshop.com. You can read my blogs. I have Teachers Pay Teachers products. It's interesting because I had this moment on the way into work this morning, and I just thought about so I listen to a lot of podcasts on teaching literature and literature, and it's just interesting to think about what we do, because when you step back from it for a second, you're trying to get kids to think about everything. You know, I actually had that realization in college too, and maybe that's sort of why I decided to pick this profession. Not only is it the exploration of, you know, ideas and thinking about the world and thinking about relationships and how they work, and, you know, really just about good, you know, hearing good stories. I've always been a big fan of a good story. You know, the Moth podcast is something I listen to, or it's just, you know, kind of regular old storytelling. This American Life is sort of really good at storytelling. And that's actually a wonderful thing. I think that's why I started a podcast. I think I just really like hearing about the sort of inner lives of people and hearing their thoughts and their sort of reflections on the world we live in. And so I think it's important to sort of keep that in mind, because today we're going to get into some of the stuff that has to do with all the other stuff, which is keeping track of everything, keeping organized, grades, you know, all the things about the job that we just don't like, you know, responding to emails, going to meetings. It's a lot of, I hate to say it, but it's a lot of busy work. And I think this struggle with this, the point of thinking about this is that, and this has sort of been my objective in thinking about busy work and how to handle it. The objective is always to get, you know, to focus on those conversations, the conversations that matter the most to us about living and being and existence and identity and who we are and how we become who we are and how prior experience shapes us and controls us in a way. Most characters have this, you know, we're talking about things fall apart right now and sort of thinking about Okonkwo's prior experiences with his father and how they sort of run his life. Hamlet's the same way. He's got this thing that happened to his father and it sort of runs his life. So there's these things that happens to us and they take over our whole existence, and they try to define us, these things that happen to us. And we have to try to resist that as much as possible and be our own person and make the right choices, regardless of what everybody else is sort of expecting of us, and regardless of like how it might impact our reputation and how it might, you know, affect other people's sort of perception of us, their image of us. That's what sort of Things Fall Apart is about. Okonkwo never really comes to terms with that. He's always so obsessed with it, with his reputation and his status. And maybe Hamlet is too. It's a kind of interesting thing with Hamlet. But anyway, you know, I think finding a path in life and going on this kind of, and this is we're also, I'm also in the middle of teaching To the Lighthouse by Virginia Woolf. And one of my students was saying how the end feels kind of cliche, and it does, because they get to the lighthouse, and that's like the title of the book. And sorry for the spoiler alert. That's really not at all sort of this climactic thing, because they just get there. And by the time you struggle through all these different relationships and these different sort of bouncing around the consciousness of all the different characters, and, you know, so one tension at the end of the book is between the father and his two kids. And interestingly enough, our protagonist is not even really a part of that. She's not on the boat as they sort of try to figure out try to resolve their conflicts. Like any sitcom, you know, like any storytelling is about how families resolve conflicts, right? It's really part of everybody's experience. And so, you know, thinking about problem solving in relationships and problem solving. And I think what Virginia Woolf was trying to do in To the Lighthouse was problem solve the First World War and how we were going to sort of redefine ourselves, how England was going to try to, hopefully the world was going to sort of rethink its journey and the path it was on toward the Second World War. And when she saw the Second World War happen, I think it was devastating to her. as it was for a lot of people. So these are like really large questions that literature asks, right? And having those conversations needs to take priority in our class. Having the conversations about reading literature out loud, having conversations, whether it's nonfiction or fiction, having those conversations and really getting pleasure out of the words and really appreciating the words. Right now we're doing this activity. We're talking about free and direct discourse and how the sort of perspective changes from character to character and really getting into like specific phrases that indicate point of view and whose perspective that we're hearing at that moment. And so, you know, all of the other stuff, like I found early in my career that I would take, say, like a whole period sometimes to give a quiz, to hand out books, to, you know, keep track of who's given what book back and that kind of, you know, all that sort of paperwork type stuff. And so I think there's definitely sort of these things that we can do that make all of that take the least amount of time possible. Even say it's like handing out papers in class, right? I mean, that's like, I actually remember in high school, I had this teacher, what was his name? Mr. Lerner. He was a science teacher. And he's like, I figured out the fastest way to hand out paper. And I timed it and I ran experiments about, you know, the quickest way to do it. And this is how you do it. You know, I give everybody in the corner all of the papers and everybody else has to do this. And you go that way and you hand it back this way. And and it was kind of funny, but it was also like, all right, so yeah, so he's going to just give this, he's going to drop these papers down and he's going to keep teaching and everybody's going to pay attention. Everybody gets a paper in a minute or two. And he doesn't have to spend 5 minutes walking around the class handing out a piece of paper to everybody, right? It's like this kind of little thing. But it reminds you, like, kids come into class. If you have to put yourself in the perspective of a child all the time, and I actually ask my students at the end of the year to, like, give me feedback on what I do and how I do it, because I want to do it better, and I want to make it a this really fun experience to come into class where you're not just, like, fiddling your thumbs, like, waiting for a piece of paper to get there. When you think about it, if there's some procedure that takes 10, 15 minutes in all of their classes, then they're just sitting around in all of their classes waiting, you know. Or even when you think about something like, because at the end of a unit, and I'm going to sort of talk about this a little bit, right? The end of a unit, that's, I think, the most chaotic part where I feel like I lose the most time because I'm handing out books. I'm just, you know, giving the due date for the notes for that book. I'm collecting all this work because I just assigned an essay at the end of a unit. So like, all right, did you hand in this and that? You know, signing out the book, put your name in the book, you know, all this like really silly stuff that's not, again, the meaningful conversations about life that we want to have. You know, setting deadlines and check online for this and that. All those kinds of writing, you know, I'll write things on the board. So it's like, all right, did you write this in your planner? You know, all that kind of boring stuff. You know, that all of that minimizing the time that takes, you know, is an important part of what we do. And of course, like on our end, it's figuring out a way of like, okay, so I need to know that they're gathering a lot of quotes, that they're interpreting those quotes when you prepare them for the essay. Again, whether this is not, you know, if they're writing an analytical essay on topic or like, so just a regular old essay or some kind of, you know, essay analyzing literature, a novel, short story, poem, whatever it is, whatever writing that they're doing, where they're sort of interpreting facts, whatever those facts might be, they have to do a lot of work gathering that evidence. And we want to sort of check in on them throughout the process. Usually for me, it takes about 2 or 3 or 4 weeks to sort of get through a unit. And so we want to sort of make sure that they know the direction that they're going, but we also don't want to assign ourselves so much work where we're like assigning something. Think about it. We could assign something every day and mark, you know, I have around 100 students. We're marking 100, you know, assignments every single day. Like, no, that's not possible. But we do want to make sure that they're held, like that they're taking notes all period. Like whatever it is that we're doing, you want to make sure that they're engaged in the thinking process the whole time. Right. And I think note taking is that skill of you're listening, you're processing the information, and then you have evidence that you did it. And then you're going to use that evidence of the note later to help you write the essay. And that's true for any to help you read, to study for any test, right? It's evidence of your, it's a record of your thinking, a memory of your thinking, a document of your thinking and that listening process, you know, so independently thinking about it and also listening to your professor talk or your teacher talk and then making sense of that material, right? So that's a huge, when you think about it, like grading all of that can be maddening. You know, I remember being, and I see most teachers who are just starting out, this is the biggest mistake they make, is to just grade everything. And they use it as a disciplinary tactic because they're, you know, first or second year teachers and they don't really know what they're doing. Nobody really knows what they're doing when they first start. Nobody's like a master teacher right away. So they're not that good at what they do. They're just getting familiar with the books that they're teaching and the ideas. So they don't have a complete command of it. And they don't have a complete command of like how to make it interesting. And so finding it, and I know that I did this, right? I tried to discipline kids by grading everything, thinking like, oh, well, they'll definitely pay attention and do this activity. and that will make them pay attention in class. And that's just not, it's not true. And when you think about a grade book, and may, you know, if you want a grade to be meaningful for a child, you want them to be able to not have 100 things to look at. Right? Like, well, how do you understand your performance if you're looking at 15, 20 different assignments and they're all these tiny little things you did in class and that grade that you got on it's supposed to mean something? No. But if you give one grade, you're like, okay, for this unit in the classwork that you submitted for this whole month period, this is the grade that you got on it. That means something, right? That's something they can look at that single grade, be like, okay, and you have a couple of those grades for a quarter, then you can look at those couple of grades and see some kind of pattern, right? But you can't make a pattern out of 20, 30 things. You're just going to get sort of lost in the numbers. You want numbers to be meaningful, letters to be meaningful, right? So that's, so my first thing is bundling classwork assignments. So that's, there's, so this topic is, this is five ways to handle the ELA workload. And our workload is a special workload. It's not like other, it's like science or math where you just kind of check on these facts, check or not, or this is right and wrong, and you send it through the, you know, the Scantron machine, and it spits out your a percentage, and there's your grade. It's so much more complicated than that. Because, again, to go back to the beginning of this podcast, we're finding the meaning of life, figuring out human relationships and why people act the way they do. It's a complicated thing, and articulating that and making that clear after you looked at a 300-400 page book it requires human feedback. Versus having a conversation today about AI, and I've read an email somewhere or something, I can't remember, it was like something on Facebook I saw, they were talking about AI grading essays. I'm like, oh my god, what does that mean? You know, and I guess in some ways it's like, yeah, they can, the machine can give feedback on grammar. We already know that Word has these little suggestions for when you're typing, and obviously spelling is something that they're all capable of doing. But to give feedback on an idea and the articulation of a clear idea in relation to something that's as complicated as a novel, you know, I'll know, seems wild. I think the thing about English language arts, before I get to the five things really quickly, is that it's easy when you go into work, you know, and everybody needs a break. You know, I know I've been, I think what happened was it was the end of this unit and I had this large stack and I'm like, oh my gosh, like, what am I doing to myself? Like, what did I sign up for? Collecting like this huge stack. It was like 6 inches or something, you know, it was like this monster stack of papers. But the way that I work through it's quick. Like, I eliminate half of it because it's classwork and reading notes that I can quickly grade. And that's like reading notes, that's also like a month's worth of homework right there. I'm basically saying, give me these notes that you took on this novel that you read. And I usually give them a month to read it. And I'm just marking it right there, just one time. I'm not collecting 5, 6, 7 different things on different parts of the book. I'm just like, hey, give me these notes. And I have a format for it. You know, if you want to go to my blog, I have a little link. It's actually a free resource if you want to go find it on my blog. just a little checklist of like, this is what I mean by take notes. And it really allows me to see their work and see if they've read the book. It's so much better than a reading quiz, and it's more valuable. But anyway, so I think when we're in school, it's like you socialize with your colleagues, you know, you can, like the kids, you go end up browsing the internet over random things, you know, answering emails. These are things that don't have to do with, again, talking about the meaning of life. They're just nonsense. It's noise. And it's, you know, when we engage in things that other than marking and lesson planning and doing our jobs at our job, then yeah, we're going to take that job home. So that's why I always ask, kind of sort of ask myself is like, am I doing work 100% of the time that I'm at work? And if I'm not, then I probably will take work home. I don't say I work 100% of the time. Of course, I have conversations with my colleagues and eat food, go to the bathroom, things like that. But I really try to just really use my time wisely when I'm at work, because I don't want to bring it home. So that's what this is really all about, is not letting work sort of spill over into our personal lives. So let's talk about the system. So that's the first thing, is that there's a lot of different things you can do. I mean, I talked about like sort of handing out papers quickly, but the first thing is bundling classwork assignments. So at the beginning of a unit, it makes my life easy for so many different reasons. It's a lot of printing at the beginning, but either way, I have handouts where it's just scaffolded notes. So it's it's maybe five or six different topics, and you can see these. I think I have some free examples of these kind of handouts on Teachers Pay Teachers. I think actually each unit that I have online, there's like a free little handout. It's just list of page numbers related to quotes, and they have to find the quote. So I think I have the beginning of the passage, like a little line from the book, beginning of the passage, tell you how many paragraphs that passage is. Say there's, I don't know, I was throwing out numbers, six topics for one unit, and then 10 or 15, you know, anywhere around the number of 10 passages for each topic. So they just have the list of page numbers, space to write as much as they possibly can, organize it however they want. My students, it's amazing when I collect notes from students, there's like arrows in some places and columns. Some kids, you know, organize and write notes in a lot of different ways. Some of them just fill up the space with all these crazy notes. And so it's always exciting to get back to see like what they're actually doing in your class. Of course, again, I'm checking in on that stuff as I'm walking around the room and giving them feedback and answering questions and different things. So there's different ways that I know that they're sort of doing what they're supposed to be doing, but, and obviously presenting their work, you know, not just like, hey, take notes, but you're going to share what you're writing down with the class, obviously in class conversations. There's a lot of different ways to sort of check in on students. But either way, that's at the beginning of the unit, I print out all of those handouts, and I don't necessarily have to get to all of the handouts. There's things we skip, you know, passages we skip, whatever it might be. Some we go through really quickly, sometimes we don't. But either way, it's all there at the beginning of the unit. So if I'm sick at home, so the sub plan is do this, you know, topic. It's the topic is a handout. You know, do this, say, you know, fill out the passages related, take notes on the passage related to imagination or whatever, joy, education, something like that. And so it's there already. I don't have to like print it out or have anybody else print it out for me. They just go in and it's already there for them, and my kids know exactly what to do. Another thing I used to do is have all these binders with extra handouts in them. Like, oh, you missed class? There's a binder over there. Go find this handout, and I'll tell them the handout. But this way, it's like, it's in your packet. You know, like, you don't, like, I'll just tell them the name of the handout that's in the packet. And they go in the packet, and they're like, okay, this is what I missed. Or if there's kids who go on, you know, music trips that are a week long, and they're like, well, what work are we going to be doing when I'm gone? And I'll name three things. And they're like, we're going to handle these three handouts, and they have them printed out. So I don't have to like go print them out for them or anything like that. Or email like, hey, I missed, like I was, like the student says I was sick in class. What did we miss? I'll just, you know, it's not like I have to say, go into class, get this handout. Think about it. They miss eight classes because they're sick. They got to go chase down eight handouts. You know, whatever different activities that kids have in different classes, they got to go chase down eight different handouts. This way, it's just like, hey, turn to this thing I gave you already, and this is what we did when you were gone. So it's really easy in that way too. And if they miss an assignment when they're sick, I collect it at the end of the unit. So they, if they're sick, they're not like scrambling to hand in that work because I collected it that day, right? They have like a couple of, say it's, you know, even a week before the end of the unit, they have a week to get it together and fill out that part that they missed. And then it's, so it's not stressful for them. It's like something they can make up eventually. And this is also interesting, right? Because I don't have to assign zeros for anything. So if I, it's not like I collect something and, oh, you didn't turn that in because you were absent, you get a zero. I collect the whole thing. So if there's something missing, I just knock off some points and I figure out something that's fair for that entire thing. And that's, so there's no, there's no missing, like, oh, you know, why did I get a zero on that assignment? It's like, well, there's no zeros. You just, I just didn't give you full credit because there's stuff missing, right? So that's easy too. And the math works out the same. Trying to think if there's anything else I wanted to say with that. So then that classwork, that bundle, that huge bundle of work that usually takes a month to complete, I collect that with the essay. So that, and that will, because they are, they, I allow them to use it to write the essay. That's the whole point of completing the work, is to help them write the essay. So it's clear, like that's the point of it. So they know that's the reason they're doing it. If they work really hard in class, they have this kind of cheat, this huge cheat sheet, you know, of all their interpretations of the novel and all the quotes that they gathered for four weeks. Ready to go for, and writing the essay is cake at that point because they've already done all the thinking, they've already collected all the quotes, and they're ready to go, right? So there's a clear benefit of paying attention in class and taking notes because, you know, it's gonna, you're going to be able to use it with the essay. So that's why I collect it with the essay. So I grade the essay and those notes at the same time. So that also kind of makes life easier for me too. So the second thing is to, I'm going to be quicker. That was the big thing. I'm going to be quicker with the next one. So number two is assign reading notes, not quizzes. So I kind of talked about that already. I basically just give one single due date. So they're reading Beloved in class right now. And the other book we're doing is Great Expectations. So I just gave that out. And I'm like, hey, due date's February 5th because we're doing, I'm squeezing it because it's Great Expectations. It's 500 pages and Beloved's really hard to read too. So I'm giving them basically 2 months. I have a short story unit that it's all in class reading for a whole month. So they have 2 full months while we study one text and then we're going to do short stories. So that's 2 months right there. So they have 2 months to read. Those are the two most difficult books in my two classes that I have. So that's why I'm giving them 2 months. To read. Usually it's about a month. If it's a 200-page novel that's really easy to read, you know, something like Exit West, they usually get a month to read that. So in this case, I give them 2 months, and they have winter break also to read it, so a little bit of extra time there. And I just collect notes. There's no reading quizzes. I don't have to assign multiple reading quizzes because I'm like, did you read up to chapter 12? Did you read up to chapter 20? Did you read up? I was like constantly collecting reading notes. Reading quizzes. And doing a lot of work to try to make sure that they read the book because they're like online summaries. And then it's like, oh my God, you know, like how am I going to kill myself just to make sure that these kids are reading? Again, does nothing to do with the conversation about the meaning of life. I don't know why I keep going to that, but right. There's like valuable conversations that we need to be having. And taking notes on a book is a valuable thing because they're kind of thinking about the book and writing down their thoughts on it. It's not just like a, hey, did you know this random thing about the book, you know, to prove to me that you read it. It's actually like a meaningful, you know, exercise. And it's, again, it's usually pretty clear to me it's more clear to me reading the notes than it is a reading quiz if they've read or not. So that's number two. Number three is to prioritize verbal feedback. So I think the other thing about being an English language arts teacher, obviously, is that we want to have this lengthy feedback. I talk a lot about this in the podcast and in my online course. But the key thing is remembering that verbal feedback is way better. We know that sitting down with a student and talking to them about what they wrote in their essay is way more valuable. Again, it's the conversation about the meaning of life, and the nature of human relationships. And so having those conversations about what they wanted to write or what they wanted to think is way better than, you know, just, you know, all these random questions and comments written down on paper. Some of that is valuable, obviously. That's tendency what I do is I basically ask questions about different things, little gaps in their thinking, perhaps, like, you know, connecting one thought to the other thought, those kinds of comments that we make. But I really just mostly underline things, have a little symbol that goes with it, basically to encourage them to think about how they wrote the thing. But the verb back, the verbal feedback that I give is when I hand the essay back, and then I have a checklist that gives them things to think about with feedback. So that's one way of making life easier, is by giving them feedback in a variety of different ways. And this brings me to my next number four, is practice low stakes writing. So if you have them write single sentences, just one sentence analysis on interpreting a quote or responding to a question, like a kind of practicing a thesis statement. And what I just did actually was had a discussion. It's like a canvas. I don't know what everybody's learning management system is, but usually there's some option to like make a public sort of comment that everybody can read. So what I'll do is I'll just go through and I'll say, hey, this is public. You know, it's just one sentence. Don't worry about it. Because I know some kids are kind of sensitive about putting their thoughts out there publicly. But, you know, everybody gets to see all the different arguments, and they start to see what we see, right? They start to get like, oh, this argument's really good. This argument's not that good. And they start to see why. So we don't even have to explain why. That's what I do. I'll kind of like take different examples. I'll kind of scroll through and be like, okay, see, this is why this is strong here. And this needs a little bit here. Don't do that over here, right? But kind of encouraging them, sort of highlighting some of the good sort of observations that people make responding to just one question or interpreting one quote. So that low stakes writing, it doesn't have to be graded. It does not have to be graded. It's one sentence. I have a class participation grade. So if they're not doing that work and not submitting that work, I can account for it somewhere else. I don't have to stress about, you know, again, going through the grade book again and having 1,000 grades. It's just a little assignment to help them become better writers. So that's another thing, is to have low stakes writing, and giving verbal feedback on that low stakes writing is also really important, formative and summative, right? And so the last one, trying to think if there's anything else I want to get over with that. The last one is number five. Don't grade everything. So that's sort of basically a point that I just made with the last one, but it's good to think about separately. Not everything deserves a grade. So especially when it comes to reflecting on essays, revise your thesis statement, revise your introduction, revise your conclusion, whatever, you know, all these different things that we tell them to revise. I chunk it. That's how I do it. I don't ever expect the child to revise a whole essay. I'll basically just have them revise a part of it. And so that's, we don't have to grade that. We don't have to grade a revision. The revision is to help them revise, like be better revisers of to edit their own essays. That's the point of it. Why does that get a grade? We don't have to grade that. There's no reason we have to assess that. There's nothing we're judging there. It's just like they're trying to make their writing better, right? It's like the point of school is to learn, not to get grades on everything. And this is sort of my overall point here, is that the thing that gets in the way of talking about the meaning of life, that's the main thing that we're doing. Grading gets in the way, right? Like too much is, you're not learning when you're proving to somebody else what you learned, right? Like, no, I get it. Like writing is practice. Of course we want to it's like playing basketball. You want to practice it and get better at it by practice. But again, like think about that. Like a note is a way and is a practice. Like I'm writing this down. I'm sort of thinking about this thing. And then later you're performing like the formal, you know, essay. But still, like again, the main core is reading and thinking about the reading. That's where they learn the most, is by reading. Really great writers, the best writers of all time. Toni Morrison, Virginia Woolf, Chinua Achebe, Charles Dickens. Like reading these writers helps them become a better writer. Having conversations, taking notes, thinking internally about them, that's the thing that makes them smarter and more wise and educated. Just proving to us, you know, and giving us some like assessment is taking away the fun of things. You know what I mean? Like they would rather be talking about the book with a partner or in a group or whatever, than sitting there thinking about what makes a good response to a question, right? Like, of course, writing instruction is important. But right. Like things like the whole language approach is that it's like, you know, it's good to just focus and prioritize reading and discussing the book, and that's what we want our jobs to be about, and not all the other crazy stuff that will drive us insane and make our lives miserable, make us want to like really hate showing up to work because we have all this like stuff we dread doing, right? And grading essays is probably, if you ask any English teacher, is probably the absolute least favorite part of their job and is what they hate the most about it. And so it's like, all right, so let's do this in a way and set up a system where there's other ways that we can give feedback on writing where we're doing this all the time and not drive ourselves nuts, spending hours and hours. You know, I calculated for this blog, I thought like, oh, let me sort of calculate like how long does it take to get it through 100 essays. When you start doing the math, it's sad, right? Because you can either spend like 2 or 3 hours or you can spend 8 hours depending on how quickly you get through. You know, is it 2 minutes or is it 5 minutes? You know, if it's 10 minutes, then you're going to spend your life grading essays. And that's not, I don't think anybody is going to, you know, their life's not going to be changed by that. And so, you know, and again, not to take away the value of giving feedback. It's just like being thoughtful about how we do it. That's going to make our lives easier. All right. Well, thanks for listening. That's 5 ways to handle the ELA workload. It's not easy. I know. It's something I struggle with every day. That's why I like to think it through with everybody. And if you liked listening to this podcast, please give me a review online. I'd really, really appreciate it. Thank you.